FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today is March 6, 2018. Well, you heard recently about tariffs imposed by the Trump administration on aluminum and steel. What effect is it going to have? First, as always, be a part of the show, participate, send us questions, comments to kl@kerrylutz.com. So tariffs, all of that, well, we figured we'd talk with Lou Weiss of Manufacturing Talk Radio. Lou, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks a lot, Kerry. Appreciate it. Always like being here.
Likewise. So, hey, we got these 10% on aluminum, 25% on steel tariffs. What does that mean for manufacturing in the U.S.?
Wait, you want me to give you the bottom line, or do we have 10, 15 minutes to talk about it?
Tell us the bottom line, and then we'll talk about it.
Bottom line, this is going to fail. It doesn't work. It's never worked. George W., he imposed a 30% tariff. That didn't work. Reagan imposed it. Tariffs don't work for all kinds of in-depth reasons.
Yeah. Well, is it the beginning of a trade war, or are they just going to let it fail?
No. If he, Mr. Trump, actually imposes this, there's going to be a trade war. And he's going to do the trade war against the countries that he wasn't meaning to do the trade war with. He wanted to do a trade war with China. Well, China only represents 4% of the total steel that comes into this country. The number one country is Canada, who represents 16%. You don't really want to mess with your friendliest ally. And he's totally out of, you know, I'm going to say it, he's totally out of control. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Well, so let's look at the tariff on aluminum. Supposedly, yeah, the wealthiest aluminum magnate in China has exported 2 billion pounds of aluminum, which is sitting in the Mexican desert waiting to get imported or exported from Mexico into the U.S. Because he shot it over to Mexico, there's no tariffs with Mexico due to NAFTA, so it will come into the U.S. as if it were manufactured in Mexico. In addition, we've got NAFTA being renegotiated. And the main sticking point, from what I understand, Lou, is these origin of the product, the marking that says you can put it in Mexico on it or Canada. But we know for a fact that huge amounts of Chinese products are going into Mexico. They go to assembly plants, whatever. They get stamped out into a product effectively made in Mexico, no tariff. So this kind of back end and runaround of what was intended to be a North American free trade alliance has turned into the North American free Chinese trade alliance. Is he off the wall on this?
Well, I'm going to leave that question alone. Here's the point. And there are two points in question. One, let's talk about the NAFTA just for a second. NAFTA has been in place for 21 or 22 years. When we started it, it was a $300 billion trade relationship between the three countries, U.S., Canada, Mexico. Today, it's $1 trillion. $1 trillion worth of trade as a result of the trade agreement. Now, he's talking, additionally, Trump is talking about, because of the loophole that you mentioned, he's now also talking about, and it's not very widely spoken about in mainstream media, that he's talking about also imposing a tariff on the content of finished product. So you may buy Chinese steel, ship it to Mexico, and make a toaster out of it, and there's 15% or 20% steel in it, he's going to charge a tariff against the 15, 20% of steel in the toaster. So there's no getting around it. The question, of course, is can U.S. Customs deal with the issues of determining what the content is of every product that comes into this country. And that's impossible. They have a hard enough time dealing with the harmonized codes today without having to go through segments of a harmonized code.
Yeah, so it's got practical problems. But look, back when NAFTA started, I don't remember exactly what the date was. It was 25 years ago. So back then, the U.S. had zero trade deficit with Mexico. Now it has a $71 billion trade deficit. Back when NAFTA started with Canada, the U.S. had a surplus. It now has an $18 billion deficit with Canada. And a lot of it is because China is using them as a backdoor to get into the U.S. tariff-free. Now, if we want to trade with China, and I assume we do, isn't it better to cut that practice off and come to an agreement with China?
Well, yes, and I wouldn't disagree with that. But there's another factor. In the United States is not really a exporting country. The people think it's too difficult. The banks make it difficult in terms of letters of credit and so on. But the point is that there was incentives in the 80s to stimulate export, to help offset to offset the balance of trade payments. They had what they call was a DISC corporation, Domestic International Sales Corporation, which I was one of back in the 80s. There were only 1,000 companies in the United States that was a DISC corporation. And what was the benefit? 80% tax forgiveness on all export sales. That was huge. And it turned around the balance of trade payments. Why aren't they doing the same kind of thing today? Give incentives to American companies, manufacturing companies, to do more export sales. You can't stop the import of goods, but you can incentivize export of goods. And that would be the easiest way, the smartest way, the most profitable way, creating jobs, and on and on and on, if we exported more. Even though export sales in this country has increased, but only because there are countries that want American products, not because manufacturers, the little guy who owns a machine shop in Des Moines, Iowa, 30 employees, knows anything about the DISC Corporation or the newer version, which is a FISC Corporation, Foreign Investment Sales Corporation. The government doesn't promote it. The government doesn't push it, except to only their big friends. And so, that's who are the ones taking advantage of it. The Lockheeds, the Boeings, the Walmarts, all the big corporations are getting a huge benefit on export. No one else knows about it.
Right. So this is the problem when you expect government to work hand in hand with private industry. It never exactly goes the way you think. Government winds up picking winners and losers. It's really an ad for why the government shouldn't be involved, why they should just create policies that are aimed at achieving certain ends and then step away. Because when it comes to implementing them, when it comes to showing people how to use them, showing companies, how do you get this tax break? You know, it just never works, Lou.
No, it doesn't. And I'll take it one step further. And you as a media guy, as I am, the mainstream media does not talk about these issues either. They should be bringing it up. Why aren't they having manufacturers, not the big guys, not Boeing, not the steel industry, have the middle-sized companies get on the air and tell them what they think about what's going on? They don't do it. We tried yesterday to get three U.S. major U.S. steel mills in this country to get on our show to talk about what's going on with the steel tariffs. They refused. They declined. They don't want to talk about it because this is a payday for the steel industry. Payday.
Yeah, well, it's a subsidy.
Just forgive me for one moment. If once they impose, assuming that they do, a 25% increase, understand that in the last 2 years, here in the United States, the steel industry raised their prices 22%. If they implement the tariff, steel tariff, the steel industry is going to raise, let's say the tariff is 25%, they're going to raise their prices another 15%. So the savings is not going to be that big for American companies. They're going to wind up paying a lot more. Jobs are going to still go out the door because companies are not going to be producing as much goods because people don't want to pay the extra amount of money it's going to cost to have your car made out of steel for another 25%, which, of course, Wilbur Ross, Secretary of Commerce, said yesterday, well, it's only going to be 0.6% on a can of soda. Well, yeah, okay. How many cans of sodas are sold in this country on a yearly basis?
Oh, it's billions, but yeah.
Yeah, so, billions, who knows?
So what about the concept that this is leverage in negotiations with the Mexicans and the Canadians to get them to agree to the local content rules? And well, there's so many other things involved in this NAFTA. I mean, when NAFTA was passed, there was no such thing as Amazon, right? There was no such thing as e-commerce. They have tremendous barriers up against U.S. e-commerce companies, especially in Canada. You got to fill out this ridiculous form. If you mail somebody a toenail clipper, you got to do it. And it's a trade barrier. Just like you're saying, the little companies don't want to learn how to trade overseas. I think a lot more have than used to, but there's still a gap there.
I agree.
There's still a gap. There's no question. Yes. If I sell somebody on eBay a cell phone case, I got to fill out two or three forms to the Canadian government, and I might even have to pay a tariff on it, or the recipient will. So you look at that and you say, these are barriers. And look, it's a lot easier for the Canadians. If I want to buy a cell phone case from a Canadian vendor on eBay, all I got to do is click the button. They mail it. They might have to fill out some form, but it's automated on the site. No big deal. So, you know, the Canadians and the Mexicans have been getting the better of this NAFTA deal. I view this as really being a NAFTA issue more than anything else. And it's put it's put the screws to them and said, all right, you got to play ball here. You got to level the playing field. No more of these non-tariff trade barriers to stop U.S. goods and services from coming in. I mean, is that so unreasonable?
No, that's perfectly reasonable, but it's got to work both ways. And the way that Mr. Trump did this the other day, I mean, nobody knew about it. No one thought about it. He's not thinking clearly. And, you know, my personal position with in regards to politics is that I'm basically an independent. I want to see the right thing done all the time. And
whether the Republicans or Democrats or independents
are doing it or not doing it, what's happening here was no thought, no forethought, no involvement with the right people. Why is it that, mainstream media doesn't bring manufacturers on their show to talk about this instead of bringing in politicians who are totally biased, whichever side they're on, they're biased for that side. And the American public is not getting a true insight into what's going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's another issue coming up, which I've also not heard anybody talk about, and that's the WTO. Europe is going to start filing complaints against the U.S. for this embargo, if you will, and file a complaint and see how that's going to play out. WTO may wind up ruling against us. So what happens then? Trump will say, okay, I'm out. I'm not in the WTO anymore.
Yeah, well,
not a good position.
Certainly the trade, free trade is a great thing. Every economist, on the planet will agree with that. However, that's not the end of the discussion, Lou. That's the beginning.
No, it's not.
That's the beginning of the discussion. And, you know, I don't want to get into fair trade because one person's fair trade is another person's unfair trade. But the deck has certainly been stacked against the U.S. in the WTO, in NAFTA, and in other trade arrangements. So isn't it time we had some equity in trade?
I don't disagree, but there's a better way to do it.
All right. Well,
you don't do it because you woke up in the morning and said, oh, I think I'm going to impose a 25% tariff on steelmakers overseas. I don't think it's the right way to do it.
Well, maybe you're right.
He dumped out of the TPP. He wants to dump out of NAFTA. He dumped out of the Paris Accords. This is not the way to run a class A, number one, democratic, capitalistic country in the world.
Well, as far as the Paris Accords, the climate accords go, it called for the U.S. to spend $1 trillion and everybody else to spend no money. And the U.S. is the only country in the world that's complied with the Kyoto protocols that Al Gore had contracted for the U.S. to be involved in. And we were able to do it without a tremendous diminution of standard of living, like giving up your SUV or your car. Reason being, technology got us there in terms of fracking and bringing down the cost of nat gas to where it becomes the preferred fuel for power plants and makes coal economically unfeasible. Nobody else has done it, Lou. So
that's true.
Like, look, so, it's one thing. Hey, I'm in favor of free trade, but we can't be played for idiots anymore, which we've been since the beginning of the so-called free trade movement. Free trade has taken place at the expense of countless industrial towns and cities across the nation. And look, maybe they should have closed because they weren't inefficient, where they weren't efficient producers. And in theory, at least, free trade will weed out the inefficient producers. But when you got everybody in the world subsidizing their manufacturers, and you've got the Chinese bent on world economic domination and mercantilism, it's got to stop someplace, Lou.
I don't disagree with you, but the point is, it took 30 years to get to where we are. You can't wake up one morning and say, oh, I think I'm going to impose a tariff.
Well,
this takes, you got to have a team of people that you can trust and rely on. And I'm not talking necessarily about politicians, but certainly economists and certainly people in the manufacturing sector to be able to talk this through on both sides of the fence. This would take almost a world conference, a world summit, not doing it the way he did it.
Wow, so we shouldn't be going it alone. Perhaps there's some truth to that. But look, those very same economists and policymakers got us into this jam, hollowed out the United States manufacturing capacity. Look, New Jersey used to be an industrial state. I don't know what it is now. It's a suburban state where it's strictly bedroom communities. Look, part of it was due to pollution controls, some of them reasonable, some of them unreasonable. Where were the economists when they were implementing all of these environmental controls that weren't necessarily going to achieve their stated result?
I don't think they were brought into the picture.
Right. They never are. But look, you can't deny there's a problem. There is a problem here. And the playing field against the United States has been tilted against it for, you know, since the whole free trade thing started. There are benefits to free trade. You get to go into Walmart, and for what you used to spend $100, $200 for, you go to Walmart, you buy cheap, crappy Chinese products, and you get it for $75. Now, is that necessarily a benefit? I'm not sure. Or you buy stuff on Amazon, and you know, some of the products you can't even, most of them aren't even manufactured here. So I don't know what the solution is, but I know that doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, isn't going to cut it, right?
Right, that's right. But let me just bring up one point about Walmart. Walmart a year ago, and we had conversations with people from Walmart, and you know, they decided that they're going to pull back business from China, bring it back into the United States. That was their big promise. Well, they did do that. But you know where the business went?
Probably Vietnam.
It went to Unicor.
Unicor.
Unicor is the private prison system that is owned by the federal government. And they wound up giving contracts to Unicor to make products that were formerly made out of the country and have it made in the U.S. prison system at the rate of 16 cents an hour to a dollar and a quarter an hour. And I have people who have been on our show who have been manufacturers who have gone out of business because they were told by Unicor, why bother competing against us? We're taking these contracts. And You know, it's covered under the 13th Amendment that this can be done. But the point is, it wasn't meant for commercial products to be made in
prison.
Absolutely
not. It's like the Shawshank Redemption.
That's exactly, you know, right.
The warden, right. He says, warden, I can't compete with your slave labor. Is there anything we could do right. to work it out? And then he hands him a cake with all sorts of cash stuffed inside the box, and problem solved. No, the solution to American manufacturing is not to be found in involuntary labor in the private prison system. That thing should be eliminated, but a lot of things should be done. But, you know, that is anecdotal. And right. I agree with you. The key to erasing the deficits is encourage companies here to export. And look, identify key industries for national security, whatever. You can't deny that steel and aluminum are national security type industries. And you also can't deny that that Chinese aluminum magnate has 2 billion pounds of aluminum sitting in the Mexican desert trying to get into the U.S. tariff free. And maybe the aluminum tariff was really aimed at that one individual.
Well, that could be. That could be. But then they got to play the game straight and narrow so everybody in America understands what that guy in the White House is doing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I agree with you. Transparency, important and vital to a functioning democracy. But you can't deny that the U.S. market's under siege from countries that really block huge amounts of American products and services, and then love to dump their products. And believe me, I'm no union fan either, but with labor rates far below the U.S., so that the only people that can compete with them are the private prison system. That's a mixed up state of affairs. Hopefully,
I know, that's a
we
really
can get rid of that
comment.
Yeah. You know, I mean, if that's what it takes for us to compete, then what is the solution? Everybody goes to jail and becomes a laborer?
Then there's a serious problem. If we need to create a prison system to compete against the Chinese,
their prison system.
Issue.
Yeah, their prison system. Next thing, they'll be harvesting
right.
organs from the prisoners, and we don't want to go down that slope. We're supposed to right. be the land of the free. So predictions here. My prediction is these things will never happen, that they were strictly negotiating leverage for Canada and Mexico. Canada and Mexico have no choice but to capitulate. Mexico is the U.S.'s ninth biggest trading partner. The United States is Mexico's largest trading partner. Canada is number two or three for the U.S. The U.S. is number one for Canada. If the little man, right. if the little man boy who runs Canada right now wants to play with Trump, he's literally holding the barrel of a gun to his head with his finger on the trigger. That guy is non compos mentis.
That's true.
He's a moron. He's the Bill de Blasio of Canada.
But I have to tell you that I think that the approach to these tariffs, where Mr. Trump decided to go after China, the number 12 country in the world that exports steel to the United States, number 12. There's something wrong with that. Either he doesn't know the numbers, or he's not getting good advice, or he's not taking any good advice. It's a real problem. And if the whole thing was a ruse just for Canada and Mexico, then why don't you play the game straight instead of frightening the hell out of every country in Europe?
Yeah, well, like I said, his statement that happened on Friday, I believe, blew the markets out of the water. Over the weekend, he said, well, you know, as long as we can arrive at accommodation with Mexico, it's not going to be a problem. I mean, this is the way the guy negotiates. If you want to understand why Trump does what he does, just read Art of the Deal. It's in there.
Yeah.
It's all in that book. Now they have a worst possible scenario. So now they're going to be reasonable, because we've had 7 rounds of NAFTA renegotiation talks. And the Canadians and the Mexicans are in a complete state of denial. And hey, if they don't want to take our dairy products in Canada, we won't take their wood. If that's what the kind of thing they want to do, then it's only going to hurt them. Lou, Hey, man, it's always good to talk to you, get your insights on manufacturing, such a vital part of the U.S. economy and the international economy, of course.
Absolutely.
Just
Absolutely.
Tell us.
And I enjoyed being here.
Always. Well, your podcast, website, just give it to us again.
Sure. That's MFGTalkRadio.com. And I don't know if you know, we started another one called Women and Manufacturing. And that's WomenAndManufacturing.com. And the timing for this is unbelievable because I think the women are taking the stage.
I totally agree. And I hope you're right. There's nothing outside of a woman who's armed with some serious weaponry. There's nothing sexier than a woman in ruffled overalls, sweating her extra weight off on the factory floor. Can't get enough of it. I think you're really timely there. Great idea. Hey, go check out Lou's podcast and questions, comments. We urge you to be part of the show. We're going to start reading your questions and comments. We'll have a hotline shortly. The email address is KL@KerryLutz.com, Twitter feed @KerryLutz, and the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Lou, it's always great to have you on, and we will talk to you again real soon.
Terrific. Thank you much. Appreciate being on.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.